For April the 9th, 2021, we talk about Magic the Gathering Arena, Hades, and we ask you which video game villain lair you would most want to live in. Welcome to Level 366. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, Jala.
Thank you.
Yeah, good having you here. I'm trying to think of any fun, like, introduction stuff, but I don't have it. So I'm just gonna ask Jala, what you've been up to? How you been doing?
I've been stabbed several times.
Oh no!
Needles.
Should you go to the hospital?
I got my first COVID shot. Yay!
Cool.
And I also got my second allergy shot. They had to give me three shots for that, and I'm not going to talk about it in great deal for the people who are dislike of needles. Don't worry about it. But like, I am on weekly allergy shots.
Yeah.
That's three a day every week.
The shot.
Did they finally? Different places for each shot, or are they just going the same place?
Two in one place and one on the other side.
Mm. Okay.
I will ask you this: what do you find more onerous, the weekly allergy injections or the test itself?
The test was way worse. I can show, like, I think I did actually tweet some gruesome thing, or no, I don't think I tweeted it. I think I maybe put it in like the wellness chatter. I can show you pictures.
Oh, I'd rather
you
not.
You really want to see? It's gross and terrible. Like, no. I have such welts. I am allergic to Texas.
Yeah,
it is terrible.
Yeah.
Everything that grows in Texas.
No. Everything that grows in Texas, and I'm also allergic to my dog.
Oh no.
And also allergic to cats. So like but I'm not allergic to birds. So
okay.
I'm okay with birds, but yeah.
Oh,
it's
man.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. I had terrible allergies as a child and had to get allergy tests frequently. Was at daily shots at certain points. So like I'm good with shots. It's anything that involves intravenous that wigs me out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have traumatic memories. Yeah, no, you shared the photos of the welts.
Uh-huh.
Those are really nasty. Those are mean.
Well, and like the ones on my back were not, that's like after it had been a while. That's not even like as bad as it was.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They were pretty bad, but like everything was a welt. Everything turned into a welt. And
yeah.
Then when they further tested, it's like, yes, you were allergic to all of Texas. And also dogs and cats. And I was like, oh, but I love animals. But it's like, okay, well, you can have birds. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good that I like birds. You know,
I'm going to delete this message out of the Slack because the welts are giving me bad memories, actually.
Sure. Go for it. Do it.
Yeah.
I only share it if you ask. Definitely delete it.
No,
so,
no.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, well, the test was terrible. That was the worst.
Like,
I'm very incentivized to like post terrible pictures on the Slack channel.
Well, when everybody was like fussing about the COVID vaccine and, you know, people are having reactions and stuff, I'm like, that's nothing. Have an allergy panel and get back to me.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then like right after that, after we discovered that I'm allergic to everything, then we had to do yard work and I was out there with a mask and everything all covered up. And
yeah.
Like, I still was like down for a couple of days with bad, bad allergies. So.
Awful.
Yeah. It was bad.
Well, at least you're getting shots and it'll get better. Hopefully.
Yep. Yep. It will over time. That's the whole thing. So
yeah,
that's my life. Tell somebody else talk about something that's not that.
Yeah.
Well, being out in nature, I can follow up.
Tell us about it.
And we're doing backyard camping again. It's gotten to that point in the year.
Ooh.
So that's a fun one. Hopefully
cool.
Our kids will not be covered in welts or hives at the end of the night.
Yeah, hopefully.
that's a hard way to learn a lesson about allergies that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, you're supposed to get a couple of bumps and dings if you're camping, though.
Yeah, but it's from, like, you know, fighting each other with sticks.
Yeah,
well, I guess mosquitoes are accepted.
Yes.
As a bump and ding.
Well, you're right there. You're not sending them up to the Miami River Valley and like dropping them off with nothing but a knife. They're like, they're in your backyard.
First one to make it back gets it back in the family. Other one, don't even bother.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
So I guess you guys get, probably because you're so humid, you guys probably get as many mosquitoes as we do down here.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, we get a lot of mosquitoes. We've, for the past couple of years, we've done like a backyard treatment that's been really effective. Like I haven't worried about mosquitoes in the yard for a couple of years now.
No. Mm-hmm.
So that is nice. It's like, I feel like anytime I look at a service like that or things along those lines, I'm like, it'll probably be like half as effective as they claim.
Mm-hmm.
But this was nice. This is nice to actually not have to worry about them.
Oh, did yeah. And like,
yeah, yeah. And I would be lying if I said I knew all of their process, but
yeah,
I am confident that spraying is involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I used to do my like long distance running and stuff, I would almost exclusively try to run in Pearland, Texas, which is close-ish to me, because that city happens to be very, very vigilant about spraying for mosquitoes and stuff in all of their parks and along all of the roads because of how many people are out there running and stuff. Because, you know, there's like a 300 people running group in that city. So,
yeah.
And it's a pretty small place. So, you know, it's to the point where like the running group will call the city and be like, spray. And they'll be like, okay.
Well, who better to tell you when there are lots of mosquitoes around?
Yep. So like I kind of got spoiled off of that. Mm. And we have like a pond with some koi fish at it in it on my back patio. Mm-hmm. But because the water is moving, there's not as many bugs, you know, because like it's stagnant water where they lay the eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then I have like citronella plants and stuff everywhere. So
my city sends around like inspectors to like look and see if there's stagnant water on properties.
Mm,
like they don't do the fogging, but it's, you know, it's a concern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I did some lawn work as well. I nearly lit my ding dang house on fire.
Oh no. How did you do that with lawn work? Were you burning leaves or something?
I was very
doing
confused.
The flamethrower mowing grass strategy.
Yep. Yeah. Nobody taught me how to do yard work. I'm a product of divorce. No. Went around. I filled up three wheelbarrows worth of sticks from trees, you know, like downed limbs in my, you know, that could come down over winter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, and I had some limbs from last fall. I just had them on my patio out behind my house. So I was like, okay, I'll, you know, set these on fire. Here are my fire bowl that I have. It's like a mobile fire pit kind of thing. And I, let's see here, underestimated. Is it under or overestimated? The fire was too close to the other other sticks that were laying on the patio.
And you underestimated the distance.
Yeah, something like that. I underestimated the danger of having a fire
not on fire
that close. Yeah,
it was too close to my stick trail that goes back to my bedroom.
Yep, I built a little highway of sticks from any fire that I build outside straight to my bedroom because I like to tempt fate.
I want to remember where I've been breadcrumb wise, and so I just leave a little trail of gunpowder behind me,
like a Looney Tune. Yeah,
like a true American.
Yeah. So I saw this shit from my yard like catch a little bit of fire and I was like, well, fuck, I'm dead. But I picked up I just laid right down on it. I just like, oh, I built myself a funeral pyre. I took one of the larger limbs and I scattered them so they were not together, and then I stomped out the individual embers and was very happy nobody was watching me. So,
yes, fires are a big bad. Yeah.
I thought that the 10 feet would be enough. I paced it out. It was not. So
dicey strategy, by the way, spreading out the fire in order to extinguish it.
Yeah. Well, I just what I wanted was if any individual stick was on fire, I didn't want it to light the other ones on fire. So I was like, spread it out so it's isolated, and also like push it away from the house.
So, divide and conquer.
Yeah. So you live and learn. That was a dumb thing that I did. And now it's public, so everybody can hear. And it has no power over me because it's no longer a secret. So,
wait, did you do that into some content, dude?
Your insurance will go up in a couple weeks. Don't worry.
Shit, my watch heard me. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Marsha from State Farm is listening.
I like State Farm. Delicious. The rates are terrible, but it's yummy. Oh, man. How about you, Ben? What are you up to?
Dude, nada. I don't know. I just did like chores, had a boring weekend. I think I mentioned this in the pre-roll. It's warm enough that we could go outside in shorts today, so that's really nice. And it's like light, super late now, so I'm happy about all those things.
Nice.
I'm still waiting for my vaccine. They bumped up when we could get it from May 1st to April 15th, so I'm excited about that. But even with that, still, like, people who are eligible now are having a hard time finding appointments. So there's gotta hustle if you want to get vaccinated.
Yeah, everything in its time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention. I think this happened between the times that I was on the show.
Okay.
I was on Monster Dear Monster podcast talking about The Flight of Dragons, which is a 1982 Rankin and Bass animated film that brings me great joy and is one of my favorite films. I talked about that old movie that, like, although everybody knows Rankin and Bass, most people don't know what Flight of Dragons is, because that one is just like, you know, a weird one that was like released straight to video.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it was like aired on TV at a certain time and then just like disappeared from the planet. But it's very good. And don't look at the box art. Just Google images of Flight of Dragons to see the gorgeous, gorgeous artwork. Don't look at the box art, because whoever did the box art did a terrible job and had like a vague impression of what Flight of Dragons sort of kind of looked like, and didn't get any of the actual aspects of the characters correct.
Oh, no.
And the style is terrible. I'll show you guys. It's bad.
Yeah, I only know about Flight of Dragons because of you.
Flight of Dragons is so much my jam. So
yeah, but that's at that's at monsterdeer.monster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good URL.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and a palindrome. No, it's totally not a palindrome.
It's oh man, cool. Well, how do you all feel about doing the regular kind of show?
I feel like we should get it going.
Yeah. So why don't we do the brief, the multiplayer, and nope, that's the old one. We haven't done that for about a year. Let's do the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. Oh, there's the art. Oh, yeah, that's a terrible cover. I would not watch that. Yeah.
I know. It's very bad. Like, do not look at the terrible cover that they put on there. It's the worst.
I would watch the hell out of that. I just had to be very high.
It's a lot, but like it's no.
And let's get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, it's been the longest since you've been here, so I will throw it to you first.
Okie doke. So I've been playing a bunch of Ace Attorney Justice for All, which I won't talk about now because that's for a bonus level. But I can talk about The Chronicles of Riddick. I finished Escape from Butcher Bay and Assault on Dark Athena. So I finished out the rest of those games. And
nice.
Excellent.
Very excited to talk about that. So continuing on about Escape from Butcher Bay, the biggest gameplay issue I had with it was that there isn't a lean and peek around the corner. Or if there is, it's like I didn't know because I was playing with controller and it was only telling me like the keyboard inputs.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have no idea. But anyway, this game is pretty much just a shooter. It starts with a little bit of sneaking, but then that very quickly falls off.
Mm-hmm.
The last third of the game is, in my opinion, less good than the rest.
Yeah.
And it ends with a pretty lame gasp. Last time when I was doing it, I left off talking about how I had met Pope Joe, who did not do my shine job and made me very bitter. This random lady in my head that said, "You have been blind too long," and then gave me my shine job. And then I was in the cruise quarters. And then after that, I got recaptured and sent to Double Max, where I infiltrated a mining facility. I tried to escape, and then I got caught again. And the bomb that I used to distract ended up causing Infinispawn aliens to come up out of the ground. And then Riddick's like, beautiful. Anyway, they were really, really fast, and it was very frustrating to play this part. And then I was like in the middle of escaping from there, but then Johns finds me, and then I'm transferred to Triple Max, where I was put into cryo sleep. I'm like, why didn't you just put him there to begin with? You know how dangerous he is, you know, but whatever. So wait,
Johns as a distinct entity from Pope John.
Pope Joe. And Johns is the bounty hunter guy who brought Riddick in the first place.
Man, if we have like a super sci-fi universe, I expect more interesting names than Jim and John.
I mean, well, there's many Johns in one. It is multiple Johns, so.
Well, so then I was in Triple Max, where I was put into cryosleep and awakened each day for 2 minutes of exercise. This is the part that, Dennis, you were saying was solitary.
This is the only part of the game I remember.
It was memorable, but it was very brief. And then I ended up like escaping in a pod of one of the other prisoners. And then I hijacked a big robo suit. And that was a lot of fun because you've been fighting these big robo suit guys like the whole mm-hmm. time that are hard to kill. And then you get to... you know, B1. I was really pissed though, because at one part in the game, I had to take one of those down and I ran through a doorway and then I killed it by throwing a grenade at it, but it died in the doorway and then I got stuck and I couldn't advance.
Oh no.
I had to restart from a checkpoint because I couldn't move it and I couldn't get around it. And it was like a physical object. I could not, you know, just walk through it or jump over it and crouch or none of that. So that was fun.
Huh.
If there's a way to break it, I'll do it. Well, anyway, so after I hijack the robo suit, I find my way to Hoxie, who is the prison boss, and then Johns helps me dodge the guard robots in like the quote unquote final fight, which is really lame. Hmm. And then I trick them into killing Hoxie, and then Johns and I fly off in a stolen ship and say a bunch of recycled lines from Pitch Black.
Okay.
And that's the end of that game.
Right.
So it was like, it was pretty solid. And then it was like, it's all right, I guess. Yeah. I mean, like, it's not my favorite game, but like for the time period, I'm sure it was really, really good. But still, definitely the first part of the game was a lot better than as it progressed.
That's what I remember, is that it got like less special as it went along. You know, it yeah. went from, you know, going around and talking to people in the prison yard to dodging rockets from big robots.
Oh, yeah. And that gets really old really fast, because then it's just like shooter, shooter, shooter. And Riddick very pointedly doesn't shoot stuff
right.
you know, in the movies. Like, that's not his thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, this is so not Riddick. And then, like, he stops talking, too. There stops being really a bunch of narrative or anything. And then as he stops talking and making his little snide one-liners. And so it's just kind of like, you know, random generic shooter man. Game.
Yeah. So when it goes to the expansion or like, you know, semi-sequel kind of thing, the Assault from Dark Athena, does it do a reset to something kind of more unique, or does it kind of continue with the escalation?
I'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So I talking about Assault on Dark Athena. So first off, it was developed by Starbreeze Studios. I think the first game was Starbreeze and Tygon or something, or maybe it was just Tygon. I don't remember, but it was published by Atari. They had made the game and then were trying to find a publisher for it. And so like, it took a while to get all of that worked out. It was released in 2009 and it looks a lot better. Mm-hmm. And it does have that lean function, which I missed in Butcher Bay. It was initially supposed to be a remake, but then it ended up just becoming a sequel that picks up the story directly after what happens in Butcher Bay.
Okay.
So, insofar as how the game plays, it's far sneakier for longer. Mm-hmm.
It has
shadow mechanics that work a lot better than in the first game. Because in the first game, you just kind of have to guess, really, if you are in the shadows or not. Like, there's, I think there might be like some like maybe your reticle fades or something. I'm not really sure.
Like a, like a blue pall over the screen kind of thing.
That's Dark Athena.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, so anyway, like, the skiff that Riddick and Johns are on at the end of Butcher Bay is caught and pulled in by a huge merc ship, called the Dark Athena. And this recycles the beginning of Dark Fury, the animated Riddick film that's really film 1.5 between Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick.
Okay.
The two of them were in cryosleep, and Riddick, of course, wakes up for no particular reason and happens to see that they're getting pulled in. And so Johns gets taken prisoner, but Riddick woke up and, like, is ready, so he escapes into the air vents. And then he finds, like, a little girl crawling around and living in the air vents who's, like, the daughter of one of the other prisoners or something. You end up going to the prison cells, finding a bunch of different people that were captured. And then you get a bunch of fetch quests and stuff to do. The first one is to kill somebody for, like, a gross man in the prison that you end up having to fight later. And... on the way, you fight some guy named Iron Lord, who's like one of the only bosses I remember because he kept on going, Iron Lord, or like something. There was something where, like, maybe there were other people screaming, get him, Iron Lord, or something like that. But you kept on hearing Iron Lord over and over again.
So you're saying he had good branding.
Yeah, he had really good branding, and it was just really annoying. So anyway, then you end up getting an ally who helps you via consoles because he's like a tech dude. So he's helping you from the prison cell because you got him a data pad. And so anytime you see a console, you can log in and talk to him. And you end up fighting because, like, in the first game, you end up fighting soldiers and then guys in big robot suits. But in this game, you have drones, which are half human and half machine. Basically, they take a human body, inject a bunch of tech magically like Borg, and then remove the mind and the will of the person so it can be puppeted and controlled around via like a little control room thing. And eventually you come across a med bay where there's some guys being turned into drones and they beg for you to kill them before the transformation happens and stuff. So you get to see them like partially droned up. And then at one point in the game, you actually get to control drones and kill off a bunch of guards and stuff from one of the control rooms before they, you know, crack it open. So, and then come after you, of course. But in either case, the weird, gross guy that was in the jail that you had, like, to go kill somebody for him, like, you end up fighting him later because after you freed all the prisoners, he ends up killing one of the people that's been helping you. And then he's just being weird and gross, talking about, like, doing gross things with the body, and just he's really a lot. And
yeah.
All of his barks and everything are just bad. And anyway, like, you fight your way through the ship, through a bunch of different stuff. You take over a big mech again, just like you do in the first game. And then you end up trying to get to an escape pod. Your buddy, the tech guy, ends up getting killed before you can escape, of course. And you end up falling to a planet, which is like where the Dark Athena has been harvesting people to make drones. So it's like everything is a ghost town because that's where they've been taking the bodies from. And then you have to like fight your way back to the ship because you don't want to be marooned there forever. And then you have to do your like final fight against the owner of the Dark Athena or whatever, and you drop her down an elevator shaft, and that's the same thing you do to some other boss earlier in the game. Like, all the bosses are lame in this game.
Yeah.
And anyway, like, the thing about it is, like, you fight this boss at the end of the game, but you had fought her right before you take the little skiff and like leave and then crash land into the planet. And like, when you're fighting her right before you crash land into the planet, you stab her in the neck with a hairpin that you stole from her, and somehow she's still talking and still able to like walk around and do stuff, even though she just got stabbed through the throat. But whatever.
Did you stab through the front?
A small hairpin.
Did you explicitly go through the talking meat?
I don't know. It's graphics.
I feel like anywhere you get stabbed in the neck, you're probably not going to be talking too well afterwards.
That's not going to be what shouldn't be. Yeah. It's not going to be one of your best
remind
days.
Remind me not to tell you about my neck piercing. Jeez.
Well, so anyway, at the very, very end, the little girl who, by the way, gets like these magical tech powers, she's like talking about everybody in terms of, oh, the monsters are back. But then at the end of the game, somehow she knows how to do tech. And she's like, I know how to turn all the drones against, you know, or to turn the monsters against each other or something. Hmm. And it's like, okay, so she can barely process what these things are, but she somehow knows how to control whatever, whatever. But then like after you kill the bad guy, like the villain or whatever, she pops up and she's like, is she coming back? And then Riddick has the worst line in the game. And he's like, when I say goodbye, it's forever. Because, you know, you have to have that really long Vin Diesel Riddick pause. Like, they have commas in all of the text where it's just very specifically, there's a comma because that's where he pauses all the time. Anyway, and then the credits roll. I don't know.
Yeah, I submit a theory that Vin Diesel actually has narcolepsy and is falling asleep while he's acting, and everyone thinks it's just dramatic emphasis.
Right? Oh. I don't know. Well, anyway, so this game, on that note, was critically acclaimed for the voice work and the use of shadows. So I already mentioned the shadows, but it's also well acclaimed and well received, or it was at the time, for the voice work. Yeah. So whatever. The AI is kind of jank, and it was even criticized when it was extant because you can be spotted even if you haven't been seen by the guards at all. And personal complaint for me is the big robo suit guys have grenades which have super ridiculous splash damage. Ooh. And you don't have enough cover or speed to really dodge it that well, so you end up inevitably taking a bunch of hits trying to fight those things. And also, it has a lot of super macho, misogynist lines from all the mercs, including the female leader of everybody, Merc.
Okay.
And if
she says that it's feminist, so.
I guess. But anyway, while I understand that this is the kind of thing that people who have rough lines of work would say, it's also still a lot, given the fact that I'm playing it with 2021 brain. I mean, a lot has changed since 2009. So
it's hard, you know, to turn off 2021 brain.
It is. And like, just boy, it's everywhere in this game. So like, if anybody listening to this is like, oh boy, I want to go back and play those games, just be aware you're going to hear a lot of like bad misogynist macho language from like everybody.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
That's all I got to say about that. I mean, like it was pretty fun. I mean, I still say that it's probably like the Dark Athena is also probably longer than it needs to be. And nothing gameplay wise really stands out super well, other than the part where you get to take over the drones. And like, once one of them gets killed, you can just bring another one out and keep killing soldiers. Yeah. That was pretty fun. But like, that's about the only thing that I got from that. So,
yeah. So was this part of like a grand, we're going to follow all of the adventures of John Riddick kind of media quest that you were doing?
Richard B. Riddick, excuse
me. Oh, sorry. Forgot the alliteration. I just took a guess. Yeah.
Think of H. John Rambo.
Yeah. So Dick B. Riddick. Yes.
Oh, geez.
So yes. Yes. So. Yes, it was, because eventually I will be on Monster Deer Monster to discuss Riddick and the kind of entire franchise. We've read the novelizations, we've watched all the movies except the very last one, and now we have played the games, so
nice,
you know, that's a thing. Then we can talk about the monster inside.
My eyes. Yes. Nice.
Yeah. That's all I got.
It's a strange era of shooters to go back to.
I have to know, did the "when I say goodbye, it's forever" line come back at some point, like when Vin Diesel and the girl split up? Like, I feel like it's got to be called back, right?
Well, you see, that was the end. It faded to credits after that. So, and it was not recycled in the movies. Now, the Dark Athena game came out 10 days before Chronicles of Riddick came out in theaters. So, you know, like, it's kind of, or is it Dark Athena or was it Butcher Bay? It might have been Butcher Bay. It might have been Butcher Bay that came out before Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, but anyway, Chronicles of Riddick came out earlier.
Chronicles of Riddick came out in like 2004, so it must have been Butcher Bay.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dark Athena was made after that movie. And then it was like 50 million years until they made Riddick. That was like 2017, I want to say.
Right.
That's the final movie in the set. And so like enough time had passed, like 8 years, that nobody took lines from that old video game. So.
Wasted opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Just you mentioned something that you just, okay. So at one point they say, you're a bad prisoner. We're going to put you in cryo sleep. That is such a weird punishment to me. And it pops up in sci-fi a lot.
Like, yeah.
Oh, we're going to make it so you don't experience the passage of time, the worst part of being in prison.
Exactly. Like, yeah. That doesn't make any sense. Well, I mean, like in this case, they're just trying to keep him from making trouble. So if you put him in cryo sleep, he can't do anything. So
right.
You know, it's bad sense. When real life is scarier than your science fiction.
Yes.
Right. Triple Texas, max.
We're just going to kill you.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's no worries. Actually, all worries. Oh, please, people worry about this. Oh. Yeah. Cool.
Let's talk about something else now, other than very old Riddick games.
I'll ask you. So I'm nearing the end of Case 2 in Justice for All. Where are you at?
I'm in the last case. I'm like last on case. Day 2 of the last case.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So you've already done the circus.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
Which is, we'll talk about that.
Cool. So let me think here. Who, is it Ben? Hey, Ben, what have you been playing?
I think I got a short week this week. I've, as promised last week, I've been playing Loop Hero like off and on a little bit. But I think I'm approaching like my end with that game. It's like it feels like a bit grindy at this point. Mm-hmm. Where
wait, if you're approaching the end, are you also just getting started?
it's like a Tool album.
I'm starting to resonate with the black darkness that you see at the beginning of every level. I looked some stuff up online, like once I thought that I was close to the end, to see if there's anything that I was like missing, and as far as like combinations of like events and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think I've gotten most everything. The only thing that I found since then that I hadn't seen mentioned was, if you have a library and you have aliens, the aliens will start to read books after a while, but then you can kill them and get items off them. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone. It hardly makes sense to me, but it, you get loot, so it's cool.
The librarian.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
So I don't know how much there is to say about that game anymore. It's I've unlocked river tiles, but even that, I'm not exactly sure how they work. Like, the description of them say that like the effects of tiles next to them are doubled, but I will put tiles on the other side of the map that aren't even connected to river tiles, and their effects still doubled. At least it says it in text.
Oh, weird.
So I don't know if I'm not sure. There's some like weird stuff with that. Yeah, so I don't know. The strategy feels kind of samey, so I'm not sure. Maybe I'll watch like some streams of it and see if there's like better strategies that I'm just not thinking of.
Yeah,
but yeah. So
when you're into the territory where you can't tell if it's a glitch or a bug or an intended strategy, you've probably maxed out the fun of the game.
Yeah, which I'm a little bit disappointed by, or it's like, because I know a lot of people who've been playing it are kind of the same people who play Slay the Spire, but it doesn't feel like it has the same sort of depth as that. It has quicker like RPG kind of build options or whatever, or you kind of get through a run more quickly. But the choices that you make feel less deliberate. Like, it seems like you kind of go in with a singular strategy. So like, with the warrior, you just go for vampirism so you can heal yourself. With the necromancer, you just go for attack speed so that you can get as many skeletons on the board as possible. And then, like up your max skeletons. I'm on the fourth stage. So I've beaten the first three bosses, and I think that's where it ends because there's not any space in the main menu for another stage to be there. There is space for another class to go there, but I don't think there's another class besides the three that I've unlocked, so I'm not sure about that. And then the other piece, too, is like to unlock some of the buildings that I haven't unlocked yet, The items, the description of the items are kind of vague, and it seems like they're randomly dropped, but I'm not sure how to make them like drop more frequently. So like, you know, like an item description will be like, it, you know, an item distilled from the nothingness of space as it drifts apart. And it's like, all right, that's sweet, but how do I get that? Like, how do I
please,
how do I increase the chance of getting that thing so I can progress in the game? And I honestly, I don't know. It seems like it's seemingly random right now, but yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Loop Hero.
Anyway. Yeah, so Loop Hero.
What new system will you optimize?
So I think what I want to talk about, well, I'm going to exit the loop. I'm going to break the Loop Hero conversation if there's, I don't think I'm going to play it as much. I might play it as if like I'm looking for a casual game to play for like an hour or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But I think I did want to talk about something I've been playing instead is I've been playing, they have Cube on Magic Arena, which they've only done a couple of times in the past. But that's something I've been playing a lot over the weekend.
What is this? I'm sorry. So Magic Arena.
Yeah. So Magic Arena is how I play Magic online. There's also a thing called Magic Online that people play Magic online with.
Okay.
But it's basically what the, Wizards of the Coast is trying to make it, I guess, like an update basically, because the old Magic Online was made like, I don't know, this actually ties into what I want to talk about later for the weekly story, but it was made around the same time that Space Jam website was made. It's like it has that sort of look to it, but it's the idea is it's very ugly, but it works, and they have all these cards supported for it for like the last like 20 years, and a lot of people still use it. So that's why they haven't really deprecated it, but they made a thing called Magic Arena like I don't know 3 or 4 years ago. As like a way to try and start shifting customers over to that, and it looks like it's made in Unity sort of thing, and it's like has a fresh face to it and that sort of thing. But it's very much like a kind of like it, not exactly pay to play, but it's like, you know, they have economies that you can buy if you want to do drafts online, or you know, or you can like grind and over the course of time and like do like a draft every week or something like that. But it's an updated version, so they don't have the full card support. They only have like cards supported for like the last like 2 or 3 years, maybe, and then they like have like random ones that they've added. But there's like I you know, programming Magic is a very difficult thing, I imagine, and so I don't know how they can't really do that sort of thing overnight, is what I'm trying to get at, I guess. But
a lot of special cases and individual cards and stuff.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of things to account for. So I think their solution is there's just some cards they just straight up just don't allow, or they don't have programmed just because like the interactions are weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, all this is going back to, so they normally like have drafts that you can do of whatever the current rotation of cards are on the website. But they have a thing called Cube Draft, which is where, for anyone who doesn't know, Cube Draft is a thing you can do in person or you can do it online, but you building a, I forget what the etymology for a cube is. I think people say that it's like the five colors plus colorless, and it's like, oh, six things. Cube has six sides. Okay. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's basically a collection of cards that you draft from, and they're typically higher power cards. I've done it in person a few times, and if you meet people who have like an impressive cube set, it's really sweet because it's like you play with these like dual lands or whatever that costs like crazy amount of money, and you feel very scared shuffling your cards and stuff like that.
It's a card payment.
It's cool to play online because you get these really like high power decks, and so you get these like really like runaway synergies. And so it's a much more interesting like drafting experience. Like if you draft like the regular like set that's out, you know, usually there's like a lot of filler cards, but the first two or three picks might be really interesting. Mm-hmm. But in this, it's kind of like there's a lot of different directions you can go. You can make decks that are really flexible. You can do like five color stuff, that sort of thing. So it's been a lot of fun to play. And like the way they have it is you play to either 7 wins or 3 losses, and like, I've been happy with the fact that like you can go pretty, I think I'm like, I've probably played like maybe 10 or 12 drafts, and I'm maybe like down 2000 coins or something like that, which is a draft costs like 4,000 coins. So like, I'm pretty like stable, like drafting at it and like getting enough wins to get back, which is like, I think 5 wins or something like that. So yeah, so I don't know how much to talk about it. I don't know how like Inside Baseball Magic is, or how much
are you playing this with people that you know, or is this kind of being match made against like a pool of people with roughly the same resources?
So okay, cool. The other thing that's interesting about the arena is like you have two different types of drafts. They you can draft against like bots that will just pick random cards. And they added this, like, I think they added this about exactly a year ago, is you can draft with humans.
Okay.
And so the cube draft, you draft with humans. And so, which is slightly preferable because it's like, the way the bots draft is like not necessarily great. Like they have kind of like preconceived notions of what the card values are. And so like there's certain cards that'll be like way undervalued and you just draft those, that sort of thing. And then everyone kind of plays the same deck. But with human drafts, it's a lot better. Like the signals that you see are like, you can actually draft around signaling and stuff like that. So it does make for I think a more fun experience with the drafting. And cool. Then, yeah, you play random people. You just get paired up against people. The way Arena works is they'll pair people up who have like records, and pretty sure they pair people up who have like decks, because okay. Usually the decks you play against are somewhat similar to yours. It's very much like a conspiracy theory sort of thing, but I think that's kind of what they do to kind of equalize it, right? Like, what else? I think that's it.
Cool.
They also do a thing too where they have there's one algorithm they do where it's like they try and do land smoothing, where they'll draw two hands for you and they give you the one with a better mana base to it.
Okay.
instead of to try and make it like better. So like the idea is like you don't draw seven cards and it's like zero lands. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll automatically mulligan. So wow. I kind of like
that, yeah. That. I was going to say, is that before your option to mulligan or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
That's something like they do behind the scenes. Yeah. Which is
interesting. So, but yeah. You can still mulligan after that.
Yeah, yeah, correct. Yeah, it's there's kind of like a weird crossover with like playing this with like the work that I did in the casino industry, where it's like you feel this like slight hand of like manipulation behind the scenes sort of thing. And so I don't like that sort of thing, or I don't like being like controlled or anything like that.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah,
it's also knowing that the human mind is a pattern finding machine, and so you're probably constantly overestimating how, bespoke these things are.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, the draft is fun.
Yeah,
you can make some fire decks, and like a lot of things are supported. You can make decks where you like mill people out. You can make decks where everything gets a bunch of counters and you win.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Did you have anything else?
That's all I got.
Okay. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. I have an update on two games that I've talked about before. The first is Valheim.
And, oh, yeah.
If you remember, it was just kind of like a random shit doing simulator for me, because I'm on a server where people are pretty good about doing the actual game.
You had you had one job and you nearly screwed it up for everybody.
I know. but this time we all came together for one job, which was slaying one of the bosses. So I finally got to participate in a boss fight.
Cool.
And it was awesome. So it's, I think, the third boss of the game. It's a giant slime monster coming out of the swamp. And the whole thing had this like, MMO raiding energy to it.
Yeah.
And there's only, I think there were four of us on the server at the time. Maybe three, I can't remember, but it was a long fight. This thing had a massive health bar. We were all just kind of, we had to coordinate around like drawing it to certain areas that were safe for us to be in. Because if you start fighting this thing too much on its home turf, there's just so much other dangerous stuff around that, it's a death wish. But kind of kiting it around and managing it had a poison ability. So managing that, and just kind of coordinating together. So we did have to coordinate all that stuff, but it was never so intense that you didn't feel like you were just kind of hanging out. If that makes any sense. Like,
yeah.
It was not edge of your seat. Like, oh my God, yeah, you gotta go here. A, B, C, it was just kind of enough to do, to make it really fun to hang out and still be able to talk about whatever the hell you felt like. So,
it didn't feel like a job.
Didn't feel like a job. Didn't feel like a super intense boss. Felt like a boss you wanted to hang out with.
But like,
it was a lot of fun.
It was not a situation where there was one person who most of the work for organizing things like fell onto, and you did not necessarily feel pressured to perform so that their efforts wouldn't go to waste. Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you did die like that, that almost felt like part of it. We had a portal set up to right where we were fighting the boss. So if you died, you spawn back at home and you just walk through the portal. Now you won't have any equipment, but we kind of had chests in our home area with kind of backup equipment. And you would take just enough to get you back to your gravesite where you died. Pick up your equipment from that and then continue the fight. But if, you know, if someone died, then everyone else's job was lure the boss away from where they died while this other person kind of ran back, got their equipment.
Yeah.
We were probably closer to spiraling into a loss than we realized. Cause you know, if at any point you have all three people die at once, you're just kind of screwed.
So wipe.
Yeah. So that, you know, that was, you know, there was some intensity there, some stakes. But we worked really well together. We got the thing on the first go. Not too many deaths. Not too many times we had to do that kind of kite the boss away so someone could come back. And it felt very rewarding to take this thing down over time. The kind of interesting organic thing that happened while we were fighting it is we had our base on this little island, and then kind of the boss was on the mainland. But as we had to kite it and as, you know, we just had different things happening, the boss somehow Godzilla style waded out into the bay.
What?
Between the island and the mainland. And then for a little bit, it was like, we can't do any damage because we, you know, we can't fight it while swimming. And
was it's not
deep enough that we can't get to it. And our arrows don't do really any damage against it.
Was it recovering?
Thankfully it did not get back health. One of the people raiding it had said they tried it on their own before, and like if you leave it alone for too long it will start regenerating health.
Okay.
So that was a danger, but we fortunately had enough arrows to kind of plink it and stop that from happening.
Okay.
However, like just the like, okay, how do we convince this thing to leave the water? It was a very interesting decision. Like it almost felt strategic on the boss's part. Like I was like, if I was like trying to program AI knowing this was the arena we were going to fight in, this is what I would have it do. Like this is the big brain play. But there's no way that people could have known that, you know, this procedural game would create these kind of circumstances and where we'd set up our base. So it's just kind of a funny little midsection to the fight where we're less worried about killing it and more worried about getting it to where we can kill it. So that was fun.
It was like the Christmas truce in World War One. Yeah. It's like, let's take a break and play some soccer.
Yeah, exactly. Play some slime soccer. There were plenty of balls of slime rolling around, so we had our own version of that.
What was the reward for beating this thing?
So the reward was, I forget what it was called, but it was the boss drops a unique item, a couple of unique items, actually. One of them is a wishbone. And if you equip it, it's like a divining rod that lets you know when you are near precious metals under the ground.
Ooh.
So like systems progression of the game, you know, we had found iron up to that point. This divining rod or this wishbone let us find silver, which is always, you know, kind of completely underground.
Yeah.
And mine silver. That also required going to a new region. So the mountain biome is where you get silver from. But going there without this wishbone would be kind of very difficult because you'd essentially have to kind of plow around in the ground until you. Until
you'd be
you
casting about blind. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was cool. We also got this kind of item from the boss that is a buff. So you equip this other item that gives you a one-time buff, and you can have one of these equipped at a time. You get one from each boss. So this one just boosted your resistances as you were fighting. So kept that on me. Since that's the one boss I've done, that's the one I have. Although I shouldn't say that. So after we beat this slime boss, we were just kind of derping around and someone was like, oh, you want to summon one of the original bosses so you can see that. So we went and you can resummon bosses.
Okay.
Although, of course, at this point we were leveled up enough. We summoned the first boss and downed it almost immediately. But it was kind of just fun to see it. You know, it's a big, cool design. Like, think if a H.P. Lovecraft did a deer. That's what this boss was.
Okay.
So, you know, we downed that. And then I think we reached peak Valheim, where after slaying that second boss, we're kind of standing on the hillside where we fought it. And someone's like, oh, hey, see that rock, you know, all the way across the valley there? Oh, yeah. All right. First person to hit that with an arrow wins. And we just start shooting arrows at literally a rock. I was like, okay, no, I got that one. The tree next to the rock is the next one. And, you know, we spent another 15 minutes just hanging out shooting virtual arrows at trees in Valheim. And it was wonderful.
It's like what you would do if you're with some buddies out in the woods and you had a gun. Like, yeah.
Very much so. So this game occupies, you know, I've never had a Minecraft server that went anywhere, but I imagine kind of that kind of just casual pick a random thing to do hanging out is very much kind of the space that Valheim fills
right now. That's why this feels familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It hits that spot really well. And in a time of COVID, that is sorely needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last just fun story from that. I wasn't there for it, but, you know, a friend who's now mining silver, I was talking with him before the show and he's like, yeah, so I'm out on the mountain and there are these giant, you know, stone golems that will attack you on the mountain. I got one trapped down in the pit where I'm mining silver and now I can bait it into attacking me and bash the silver out of the rock. Faster than I could with my own pickaxe.
Okay. So
found a creative way to mine silver. I don't think we'll be able to bait in a golem every time we do that, but it's a creative use of an enemy in that game.
It's worth trying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, that's Valheim. Continues to be a good time. Highly recommend. Just for the hanging of the out.
Cool. What else you got?
Then I've also been going strong on Hades.
Yes.
And my praise for this continues. I have since beat the game, or at least, you know, beat the final boss for the first time. And just today beat it for a second time. And I'm really, really impressed by how they kind of weave that beating of the final boss into the story of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this from the beginning, it's clear that they were making this roguelike with story at the forefront, and the way that they handled that final fight and what comes after just shows how much story is woven into every piece of this game. So it was a very poignant moment. Especially for a game that, you know, kind of plays up you you know, having conflict with your dad and kind of being at odds and sniping at each other the entire game. It feels like there's a very earnest moment in there that is earned. Yeah. And then of course the reunion after that, your entire motivation for getting out of Hades is to go find your mom and you get to see what happens there. And that's very poignant and earned as well. So
nice.
You know, the whole ethos of the pantheon of Greek gods just being this huge family drama holds very true in this game and works very well for storytelling. So that's been fun.
I've not played that moment, but I've listened to the music of that moment. So continue, yep. Ben, I'm sorry.
What strategies did you end up using to beat the boss?
Yeah, so the first time I used your initial sword and got a whole bunch of buffs on the special for it, which is like an area of effect damage, including there's one upgrade that makes it like a lunge.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a in place thing, which just gives you great mobility. And so the combo that kind of worked really well for me was I would use the lunge to get in, deal a crap ton of damage, and then had my dashes to get out. And I had some kind of upgrade on my dashes that would debuff Hades on my way out. So that worked for me the first time around. Second time around was actually with the bow and arrow. And I don't know if I had anything. Oh, I had the meme beams on that. I had so one of the upgrades for your ranged shot, instead of firing an arrow, and this is, by the way, not an arrow from your bow and arrow. You can have a bow and arrow, and then you have, what do you call it, your cast, I guess. You shoot a red diamond.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever explains what those are, right?
That's your cast. Doesn't need to be
your cast. Yeah. don't think about it too much. I think it might be blood. I think it's blood. I think
probably blood.
Usually not words you want to hear.
it's probably blood. Yeah, whatever.
So instead of firing an arrow, you just kind of drop it on the ground and it fires a beam of ice at the nearest enemy that kind of tracks with it. And so basically I had powered that up and just ran away from Hades while my ice beams, my meme beams, took him down.
Yeah.
So those are my two wins.
Nice.
I hardcore thought that the shield was going to be the first weapon I beat it with, just because I really, really like it. But I haven't even gotten close with that yet. So it's kind of interesting. I'm starting to get to the point where I feel like there's two games, which is kind of the lead up to the final boss, where you're just, you know, you're kind of cruising through everything and building your character for then the second part, which is the final boss fight.
Right.
And it's almost like the first one doesn't really bear mentioning. It's all about, you know, what did you do to get past the one part of the game that's actually hard now?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys agree with that or.
No, that has been my experience with roguelites that I have done before, where it's like, mm-hmm. eventually, you know, the run up to the final boss or the last stage is really just an extended like character creation kind of thing, where it's like, yeah, no, I'm rolling this to see what options that I have to get up here. Yeah.
And honestly, that's kind of illuminated, I think, what I like about roguelikes almost to being able to get rid of anything else, which is I like procedural character creation.
Yeah.
Like procedural upgrade trees. Give me that. And I literally, there's nothing else in roguelikes that I'm not feel has merit, but like I can leave anything else.
Supergiant is exceptionally good at giving you those choices and making them feel meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The one other game that I've sunk time into is Transistor.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, that one is not a roguelike format, right?
No. That one is all handmade. But I mean, it still does the thing that you like, mm-hmm. which is, mm-hmm. you know, kind of give you those, you know, meaningful A-B choices, not quite as explicitly as Bastion does or as Pyre does, but you're still, you know, kind of constantly reevaluating things and thinking about not just, you know, your affinities for the way that you play, but also weaknesses that you could shore up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're really good at making mechanics that are like, or another where it's like, yeah, like kind of what you're mentioning with the AB, where it's like, if you have both these things and the combination is like a lot better than the individual things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some reward for mastery there, at least familiarity where, okay, you know, the first time I saw this, I didn't know that it would be good with the thing I'd see later. So I skipped it. My second time around, now I kind of have a better understanding of what options I might see.
Yeah.
And so seeing it again is much more exciting.
Yeah.
And that feels good. But suffice to say, even though I've now beat the game, quote unquote, I very much feel like I'm at the beginning of it in terms of, you know, getting into the meat of the story and then doing a bit of reading online. The packs of punishments, punishment is another thing that's unlocked, where you can kind of voluntarily make your run harder to get more rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is very much focused around increasing that. Which again, all worked into the story, all kind of very diegetic, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So,
nothing like setting a roguelike in hell.
Yep.
Then anything goes. Yeah. Now that's another Supergiant thing. The kind of the mutators or modifiers taking you know, once you're comfortable enough with the game, taking very specific disadvantages to get other advantages. What I'm saying is Supergiant's a very good studio.
They know what they're doing. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my time with Hades. I'm trying to think of anything else major or any other highlights. But it's been good. It's, you know, it's the kind of game single player wise, like I can just pick up for 10 minutes, I can pick up for 20 minutes, or I can play it all night.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good to have that flexibility.
You're playing this on Switch or PC?
Playing it on PC.
Gotcha. Okay.
With a PS4 controller.
Right, right. That makes sense. Yeah. Do you have anything else? Valheim, Hades?
Valheim and Hades. That's it. Valheim. Both afterlives, funny enough.
True enough. Yeah.
Sensing a theme.
I don't have anything that's explicitly an afterlife. I'm still coming off of the really rough assignment play that I've been doing. So you know, I've just kind of, you know, gummed at the edges of some things, you know, newer things like on the Switch and stuff, but I don't feel that I've played enough of any of them to be really especially comfortable, so my section's going to be pretty short here. What I have done is I have started streaming Pathologic, which I figured would always be, I always figured that would be the thing that I would do if I was going to end my streaming career, which is start streaming this hateful non-game that is nothing but text. And also it's like if you were playing a sim in a world where God was crueler than a Sims player is, you know, it's definitely a thing. But like Pathologic is one of my favorite games ever. It's so good and so artful and so masterful, and the story and themes and mechanics all weave together so well. It's not possible to win. You just have to lose in the way that hurts the fewest people. I mentioned that offhand, like jokingly, a couple of weekends ago when I was streaming, and people were like, oh yeah, I would totally watch that. People were afraid to play it on their own for the reasons that I just mentioned, that it is you know, it's I think it was in like the WAF that we did about Pathologic, where it's like, oh, this is the best game I would recommend nobody ever play. Right. And so there were, you know, enough people in stream chat were like, oh, yeah, no, that's not a bad idea. I would totally watch that, you know, do Pathologic as a service. So I was like, fuck it, man, cut it up. So let's do it. OK. And that's what I did. So this past weekend, I did the first day of Pathologic on Hexcrank Live. And it was a good time, and it reminded me of all the stuff that I love about this really off-putting and very specific and loudly stated video game. So I've been having a really good time. Do I need to describe what Pathologic is?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Pathologic is a game. It originally came out here in America, I believe, in 2005. It's made by a Russian studio called Icepick Lodge. The initial translation was really bad, and it received very limited distribution, so it was a cult hit, a cult favorite for a while, until it received kind of the definitive version, the classic HD version that got a better translation. This takes place in an unnamed town in the Russian steppe sometime either during or before World War I. You play as one of three characters. They are three different healers of various sorts who arrive at this unnamed town that has its own very specific folkways and customs. Ruling families and things like that. And you arrive on the eve of a horrible plague breaking out. The sand pest, the sand plague, Shabnak Adir. Its symptoms are so violent that some people think that they're like monsters coming in from off the steppe and tearing people apart. Go ahead.
Is this a historical thing, or is that part complete fiction, the plague part?
It's complete fiction. Everything here is incredibly mystical and, you know, straight up like metatextual as well. There are characters who show up in like theater garb who address you as the player, but also as the character. There is basically no fourth wall in this. It's an incredibly literary game. It is a game where people will lie to you, gleefully, actually, and everything is, operating on this extremely surreal, theatrical kind of level in the way that people talk to you as you go about doing your daily quests over these 12 days, while you are moving about this town, fighting the rapid deterioration of your health bars. So your hunger, your immune system, your infection level, your exhaustion, things like that, in addition to your health, scrounging around in trash cans to find things that you can like trade to kids for little things that you can sell to people in stores. No, this is
like, kids with weird masks on.
Yeah, kids with weird masks and, you know, like donkey heads and stuff, or even just like little kids. Like somebody in the chat was like, I love this game. I can't describe it to anybody because you spend most of your time trading needles to little girls for heroin. But no, it's like because of the customs in the town, sharp objects are forbidden. So like you find like needles and razors in the trash. Kids covet these things and they'll give you, you know, a bullet here, a bullet there. You know, you find bottles that you can fill up with waters to give to drunks for bandages, which you can then sell, you know, for, you know, to one person for like a different kind of you know, painkiller, which you can sell to a different kind of store to get the kind of thing that you need. And over the course of the game, over the 12 days, the economy changes depending on like what stage of lockdown the town is in. So
we've had too much heroin. We're not interested in that anymore.
I mean, kinda, yeah. But like day one, you have, you know, if you're new and you have no idea how bad things are gonna get, like you look at you walk into a store and say, like, why would I spend 150 rubles on a loaf of bread? And it's like, oh, you sweet summer child, bread is gonna cost five times that. Buy as much as you can now and sell it later at a profit because you're gonna need antibiotics.
The system makes you more excited the second time you see it.
Yeah. So I'm just having a grand old time playing this miserable game that when we did it on WoF, it resonated more with me than Gary, although he admires it. But it's like, this game is a pit and it's warm and it's comfortable and I want to live there in this fucking pit of despair. It's amazing.
I remember the chat getting to the point where everybody's like, I want to live in the pit. I want to live in the pit. And everybody's talking about living in the pit.
Yeah.
This reminds me of the game that we covered like way back when we had the developer on, where they were talking about like de-level your characters to like deal with aging, like as an allegory for that. It sounds like this, but
a little bit.
Like, choose which health bar to decrease.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. Help me understand this, because I found Pathologic was on Kickstarter in 2020. And so was that just an adaptation of it then? Or?
So I don't know about 2020. They did kickstart a couple of years ago Pathologic 2, which is, it's confusing. So Pathologic 2, it's not necessarily a sequel, but it's not necessarily a remake either. They said it's kind of like the jump from Silent Hill 1 to Silent Hill 2. So
we've got our sea legs. Now we're going to really fuck your shit up.
Kinda. Yeah. Pathologic 1, it ships with three stories. Pathologic 2 came out, I believe, in 2019, and it only has one of the stories. They're going to be adding more in later on. But Pathologic 2, it's a little bit not friendlier, because no version of Pathologic can be friendly, but it's kind of more mechanically modern, let's say. And a little bit more approachable. And from what I saw, the translation is even better than the updated translation of Pathologic HD Classic, which is already really good. Like, this is just like such a good, such a literary game that I've, you know, since I initially played it, had a little bit of like a hankering for, like, you know, stories and stuff that are like it. So like, there are Reddit threads with books that are like, you know, people are like, oh yeah, this book is kind of like this. So I've just kind of been seeking it out, like depressing stories about living in Eastern Europe and plagues and stuff.
Huh?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is really interesting. I'm looking at this Kickstarter page for it. And it just looks like there's no mention of we've done this before, this is a remake or anything like that. It raised $330,000+.
Yep.
So that is not a small amount.
Nope.
But it's also, last updated mark. Okay. Last updated, not closed.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. Mystery there.
No, it closed like in, the like 2018, 2017, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Cool that Kickstarter was a part of making this reality.
Yeah. They went to the fans, and fans were like, yep, thumbs up, cool. COVID was pretty bad for them, as it is for a lot of studios and stuff. But apparently they put Pathologic 2 on Games Pass. And if you were curious what Games Pass, you know, like what that model meant for individual studios and stuff. The boost in revenue from having Pathologic 2 on Games Pass, like, stopped them from needing to go back to crowdfunding to continue the development. So apparently, like, when you play stuff on Games Pass, the developers see enough of that to make a difference for them. So,
well, that's good to know.
Yeah. I just love this game. It is so good. Top five for me. And I'm very happy to be streaming it and explaining what's going on. Telling folks, you know, what's important about the story that we're getting, reading the exceptionally good dialogue, explaining the features, explaining the mechanics and stuff. It's great. It is a very good experience. And I'm happy that people in the chat of my stream decided to encourage me to do it. It's a long game, so I'm probably going to take a break about partway through so I can get a little bit more variety, because maybe not everybody is going to be as comfortable in the pit as I am. it'll be a good time. Any other questions about Pathologic?
Nope.
No, very cool.
All right. That's all I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what's the question that you ask the nice people?
Well, video game villains live and work in a variety of environments. I asked, what video game villain fortress or hideout would you most want to own yourself?
Yeah, and I'll get started here with Tom, who says, I want the castle from Symphony of the Night. If people I don't like are trying to visit, I can hide in the inverted castle until they leave. Also, despite being in 1797, it has modern machinery, so I assume Dracula's internet speed nowadays has to be amazing. Dracula has Bloodnet. Yeah.
I was going to say, you can't find him in a mirror site.
That's good, Dennis. I like that. Let's see, Dennis, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says Altamechia's Altamechia's castle from Final Fantasy VIII is equal parts Dracula castle and TARDIS, stylish and connected to every moment in time at once. Get you a fortress that can do both. Secondary meme slaps aside a castle. This baby can compress at least 5 timelines.
Por que no los todos? Oh, man. Altamechia's castle would be pretty good. You do have to cause the time crash, though. So you have to be comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Ben, what does Elliot say?
Elliot says, Unitco. And the first thing I do is introduce an inclusive restroom policy.
Yeah, don't you do get yelled at for going in the wrong bathroom. Yeah. Let's see here.
This is a Deus Ex reference, by the way, something that went over my head.
UNETCO. It's like the spy agency associated with the UN and the One World Government. Spoilers. Jala, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, Rapture. Even if Andrew Ryan only owned the building where you find him, it's still an Art Deco underwater tower big enough to play golf in. If you can get rid of the alt-right assholes and enact some common-sense plasmid reform, you're set for life.
Yeah, so what you need to do is you need to go in after Andrew Ryan, but before Sophia Lamb takes it a little bit too far, and then you're good. Stop it before full underwater authoritarian communism. So get yourself an underwater social democracy. That sounds kind of nice, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. Greg says, I've always wanted to live in a castle, so I'd love to live in one of Dracula's homes from the Castlevania games. Just not the upside down one, please. Even if I had control over all the monsters, they would soon turn on me if they had to clean up all the puke that I'd make trying to handle that place.
All right, the battle lines have been drawn, inverted or non-inverted.
Well, I mean, Alexander can live in the upside down one, and Greg can live in the right set up one. Yeah.
Oh, it's a duplex.
Yeah. It's a duplex that shares the same space-time as it is. Yeah.
Are they under the same roof, though?
Under and above the same roof.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of you play the game where you pretended that the ceiling was the floor and you walked around your house and like, oh no, I can't step there because that's where a light fixture is. I've got to step up when I'm going through the door because I've got to step over the, you know, the part of the wall that go, yeah, above the door.
There's two things that I do when I'm on the phone. Like I have to pace when I'm on my phone. I'm either looking down at like tiles or patterns on the floor, thinking about how I have to step in a consistent pattern.
Can't step on the same one twice.
Walking myself around the ceiling.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. And Jolly, you said.
I always played the game where I'd pretend that gravity would shift in a direction, like a horizontal direction, and like try and plan out like what I would need to grab onto if I was like falling horizontally.
Right. Like, were you afraid that that would happen when you were outside and you would just go flying into space? Or
I remember thinking about it when I was like at like a baseball field and seeing like a very long distance going in the other direction.
And Jolly, you didn't do this at all.
No, I pretended I was the Pink Panther and hummed the theme song while I was running around doing this, or rather
also good
around doing this, which is kind of probably why I like stealth games. And also trying very hard not to step on any cracks in pavement or tiles.
You got to think about your mom's back. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Ben, what does Austin say?
Oh, no. Oh no. I was not queued up for this.
Hey,
and my Facebook page went away.
Hey Dennis, what's Austin say?
Austin says, come on, Ben. No.
I planned it out. I was supposed to be Tim Ross, right?
Max Guild. Austin says, any Dark Souls castle, just so I can watch my servants try to carry food up and down all those ladders.
Yeah. Get them a special backpack.
Right.
What is the ratio, like the incidence of ladders in video games versus the incidence of ladders in real life?
Especially permanent ladders. Like, I have a fair number of ladders for my home, but they're like, they fold up and they go into a place until I need to use them. So
I think it comes down to like making somebody animate walking upstairs is a lot of a headache. So
yeah,
elevators stairs everywhere.
Well, and stairs take up a lot of space. If you have an elevator or a ladder, it's just straight up.
Yeah. You don't have to think about the footprint.
But animating them carrying food up a ladder has to be even more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably do it in an Uncharted game.
That's not Austin's problem, though.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. And then, Ben, what does Tim say? I'm sorry I went to you in the wrong order, Ben.
Well, the other thing was I share my answer with Tim, so I wanted to state that as well, because this is what I thought of before I read his answer.
Way to bury the lead. Jeez.
Tim says, I want the elusive man's office from Mass Effect. I'm not sure if it's the most effective workspace, but it looks pretty darn cool. I wanted to say this for my answer, but I wasn't sure if the elusive man was a bad guy or not. He's just very elusive.
I mean, he is not a good person, and he's only allied with you for one of the games, and then he becomes an antagonist. So I would say that is enough to say that I would not gerrymander him out of this discussion.
All right. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be yours. I mean, Elusive Man's office, you know, it's basically like set in front of the sun at the center of the universe.
You probably get free cigars.
Probably. It's very fancy. It's like the ultimate skylines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just made me think of a restaurant at the end of the universe.
I was thinking of that exact same thing too. Yeah.
Because it's a good book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Hitchhikers or is that another Hitchhikers?
Yeah,
that's Hitchhikers. It's the name of the book too.
Second Hitchhikers book. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. What a fun concept.
I'll do mine. The Fortress of Regrets. The final area that you go to in Planescape Torment. Not so much for the regrets, but just because it is a pocket dimension that is shaped entirely around your psyche, which, you know, that would be fun. Just go in there. Everything is catered toward you, you know?
Why is it on fire?
Because I have anxiety, Jala.
Why are there wood trails everywhere?
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say the Fortress of Regrets, and all, so I could live there with all the different versions of me. So we've done Ben. How about you, Dennis?
Yeah, I want the Aperture Science Labs and just do science on people. Conduct experiments.
These are pretty deadly places.
True.
Not for me, if I own them.
But I mean, like the Aperture Science Lab, it's infinitely reconfigurable. So if you have an understanding with GLaDOS or Wheatley, like your home can be anything you want it to be, you know, as long as it's roughly cube shaped. Yeah.
Any home you want, as long as it's cube.
Yeah. How about you, Jala?
Well, I would either take the entire monster tower from Azure Dreams because the final boss is on the final floor, so therefore the entire monster tower must be this person's place.
Yeah, yeah. Or how many floors is the monster tower?
40.
Okay, yeah.
Or
nice.
Dr. Wily's castle, which I'm surprised not one person said, because it's shaped like a skull. I mean,
oh shit, you're right.
All the robots in there.
It's got really good curb appeal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's what you need for resale value.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Yeah. No, I like all those answers. This is a fun question. Thank you for putting it up, Jala.
Woo! Thanks for the listeners answering.
Yeah, I would go and do some other free play answers. However, I think a lot of us are sleepy, so I'm going to usher us forward, and we're going to do a little bit of a shorter episode this time. So thank you, everybody, for participating in this week's multiplayer. If you would like to throw in on these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
And if you want to throw in on any of these villain lairs we talked about, I'm sure we could at least find a timeshare somewhere.
We could. We could all go in. Yeah.
Timeshares themselves are pretty villainous. So,
yeah. More inescapable than any of the ones that we talked about. Yeah.
If, man, you find a space timeshare with the Castlevania option.
The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. Jala, what is going on with these sounds that aren't real?
Yeah, so scientists have fiddled around with games and their different applications for quite a number of years, and I have reported on quite a number of these types of stories. It's been a hot minute since I reported one of these, and this was interesting. So, scientists created a game that causes people to have hallucination-like perceptions of sounds that aren't there. And this is both done in mice and in people. Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory of New York, led by Katharina Schmack, yes, Schmack, that brings me great pleasure, have found a way to help schizophrenic patients.
Okay.
They did, like I said, this cross-species experiment on humans and mice. Humans, of course, can talk about their experiences, but mice can be injected with different things to see what happens when, you know, the one or another thing like dopamine or whatever is adjusted. What does that do?
Yeah.
They trained dozens of mice to operate a computer game that plays specific auditory cues, which varied in volume against white noise. And the mice learned to poke their noses into ports to report whether or not they'd heard the cue and were given rewards when they were correct. And then also 220 humans, some of whom had a predisposition of having hallucinations and some who didn't, also played. And when the mice or the humans reported hearing a cue that wasn't actually played, it was noted as a hallucination-like precept or percept, HALEP.
Okay.
And both mice and humans reported more HALEPs when the cues were played at a higher frequency, probably because they were expecting to hear sounds more often.
Higher frequency as in more often, or higher frequency as like a higher pitch?
More often.
Okay.
Human participants who have had experiences of hallucinations reported more HALEPs during the experiments, which hints that there might be neural circuits that could make these experiences more likely in certain people. And specific processes in a part of the forebrain apparently is like they are related to these HALEP occurrences. Okay. So they're kind of trying to narrow down where in the brain the hallucination stuff is happening so that they can start helping schizophrenic patients, reduce the number of hallucinations that they have. Yeah. Mice, of course, had like dopamine boosts and stuff, and they had more HALEPs reported than when they didn't have any drugs in their system. And they didn't have any other performance problems or any erratic behavior. They were basically dosed up like the dopamine levels of someone who has hallucinations.
Yeah. Because schizophrenia, I mean, there are multiple ways that it acts, but dopamine is very heavily involved in that any other kind of psychosis, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Usually dopamine blockers are prioritized as a treatment method for people who have any of those kinds of experiences. So the research is basically using this simple game to investigate different regions of the brain, and they can keep applying this and keep fiddling with different hormones and things like that to better pinpoint the causes of hallucinations so that they can have better, more targeted treatments in patients that have this particular issue. And I thought that was just really neat. Yeah. And it didn't go into any detail about like what kind of game, like it's just probably a super simple game that just has, do this. And then, when you hear the tone, do this other thing and whatever. But, still it's tangentially related to games, and it's people doing some kind of basic game to kind of like further the cause of science and wellness.
Yeah.
This is a whole new level of pictures you can hear.
I would be curious to look into this and see if they found a way to control for people who were just hungry.
Yeah.
that is always something that I think of when there is a Pavlov style thing. Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
well, the treats were only for the mice.
Gotcha.
The people didn't get treats. It's just that they were trying to incentivize it for the mice because they can't tell the mice.
That there can't be like a social reinforcement from human to mouse, mm-hmm. like there can from human to human. Well, I hope that the humans had snacks somewhere.
That's a, as I say, research shows that mice were treated better than humans in this experiment.
I don't know if they got injected with stuff. I don't know about that.
Give Dan a treat. Come on.
They were injected with dopamine. I get high and then get snacks when I play a video game, right? Come on.
I mean, to be fair, dopamine is one of only two things that you actually like. So
yeah.
Oh, this is interesting. I really hope that nobody nefarious gets a hold of this research and reverse engineers it.
No.
Please don't. Please don't. For mine, this is real quick. This is just a thing is happening, but also it's happening very quickly. A visual novel that I have been looking forward to coming to the Switch this week. The House in Fata Morgana is a visual novel that has kind of a horror suspense kind of element to it. It's like a haunted house that is like ruined multiple generations of people who live there. And you get to like go and see all of the horrible things that happen in this house over the different time periods and stuff. It is very highly rated. It had been out on PC and PS4 and PS Vita, but none of these are systems that I actively play anymore. So I've been waiting for it to come out on the Switch. Turns out it's coming out on the Switch on April the 9th, which people will recognize as Friday, today, the day this episode comes out.
Cole.
Yeah.
Cole.
Yeah.
That premise you just said sounds a lot like Perception, which is that game I was playing and set down so I could play all the Riddick games.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Because it's a house that ruined generations of people's lives, and you get to see all the horrible things that happen in this house.
Uh-huh.
Although, like, you are a blind lady exploring it. But yes, like, you're experiencing all of that. And there's also, like, an active presence trying to kill you.
Okay. Yeah.
Also sounds like House of Leaves.
to a certain extent, across history, yes. Yeah.
Bingo card for Cole, checked off.
For sure. I mean, it's just assumed that I'm thinking about House of Leaves all the time. Have you read that, Ben? I forget. Did you read that?
I did. It took me a long time.
Yeah. So subsequent rereads go much faster. But I had been looking forward to this, like the same places that it talked up, like Steins Gate had talked this one up, and the visual novel pipeline is so sporadic that like when one of these is going through not just its translation, but also ports to various systems and stuff, I tend to follow it, and the fact that it's coming out on Switch is neat. So after I finish Phoenix Wright, I will have a new VN waiting for me.
Woohoo!
And nice. I can report on if it's good.
And if it is, I guess we're going to be doing a bonus level.
I mean, if you like it.
If I like it only. If I don't like it, you don't want to know.
What? No, I want to hear if you like it. No, I wouldn't make you do a bonus level about something you don't like, because I wouldn't force you to play through it all.
We did that bonus level about Danganronpa so I could get mad, but then I actually ended up being like fairly level-headed about that.
Not nearly as bad as
anybody thought, because I got the vitriol out on the level.
I didn't agree to do the bonus level until you had played Danganronpa 3 of your own volition. Okay. All right. Dennis, what is going on with this new deck building game going on?
Yeah, I mean, continuing the trend of literally any genre plus deck building is what you get for games nowadays. They have a game now that is XCOM plus deck building.
Okay.
Which obviously has my attention. Yeah, it's called Trials of Fire. This is out right now, so you can go play it. And like I mentioned, this is turn-based combat, XCOM style, using a whole deck building system. Of note, the combat happens on a hexagon grid instead of on squares. And the cards that you put into your deck are used both for your abilities and for movement. So you've got that whole multi-use card thing going on that I am quite fond of for Deck of Wonders reasons and just in general. I like that mechanic. It is not surprising that we found another genre to staple deck building onto. And your mileage may vary in terms of how well that goes, depending on what you like in the genre and what you think of deck building. But it seems like Trials of Fire is a very competent attempt at that, and a lot of interesting things going on there. So if you're like me and you like deck building, and if you're like me and you like XCOM, you might like Trials of Fire.
Trials of Fire. It looks like it has, the central character in this image, the banner image, looks like Egyptian, but also I see like a Celtic Viking guy and an elf person. So
yeah, there's a lot going on in this image.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Whereas the screenshots of like the actual gameplay, it's like tokens of these people moving around on the board. So
I'm good with that.
Very lo-fi approach, but that is completely acceptable. The environments, however, are very detailed. So
It looks like a great presentation. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now this looks cool.
Good art direction. +++.
I'm down. That'll be coming out April 9th. So this Friday is busy.
Yes, indeed.
And Ben, how about you?
In sad news of something that's happened this week, in neutral news of things that's happened this week, they released a Space Jam trailer for the next one with LeBron James.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
All I've seen is reactions. So this is like they're going like full multiverse with it. So drawing in not just Looney Tunes, but anybody who's ever been in fiction kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure, but none of that stuff matters. The bad part about this is they've taken down the Space Jam website.
Are you fucking kidding me?
The one that's been up for the last like 20, 25 years.
Are you kidding me?
It's no longer there.
No, you can. I can right this wrong. You can click a button and bring it back. It is still there. You can find it.
Where? Show me the button.
I have it on myself. I'm told it's in the top right corner.
Oh, the X button? There is an X button. Oh, there's a Space Jam. Okay, all right.
You got it?
Space Jam -1996 is where you need to go now, I guess.
Bomb diffused.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
I will say that this might not have been here like 3 or 4 days ago. Or at least I didn't see it.
That was my fucking rock, you guys.
Yeah,
I know, right?
I got to go to Planet B-Ball, okay? Because if you like
boxing, if I can't see the Junior Jam menu, what faith in life do I have?
I need to see the player bios. I need to learn about Charles Barkley. We're also going to learn about Charles Barkley. Oh, the press box shuttle. I'm very happy that they preserved the Space Jam website. This is a disaster averted.
Oh man, can you imagine being the person that like didn't save that for archival purposes? It's like the guy who like caught that game losing home run, whatever, during the World Series.
Oh yeah, no, he had to leave the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank God they had it archived.
So I think the improvement here is they should make this the Space Jam website, and then for the new one, that's Space Jam -2021.
Yeah.
That's what I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Not spacejam.com/1996. At the very least, they knew that, like, they knew that they had to keep it up, or else people like me would fucking mail them nasty things. Not like life-threatening things, but just gross things.
Yeah. Go on.
No, it's whatever I could find around the house.
Might be other websites we need to defend the honor of. We don't want to give away our secrets.
It's a site that has a site map, y'all. So I don't want to hang on this, but like any of this,
hang on this like the rim of a basketball hoop.
Yeah, break the backboard. Break the backboard. No, any of these last vestiges of late 90s, early 2000s, which I'm just going to call Hypnospace. Yeah, any of this Hypnospace needs to stick around, not just like, you know, in an archive.org address that will lose some of the links. Preserve this stuff because like these were magical physical locations that we would go to, you know, to learn about Space Jam.
This is the internet as it should be, and not Skynet secretly trying to destroy us by turning us against each other.
Yeah. No, this is, man, if I could flip a switch and podcasting still existed, but I could go back to like 1999 internet. Oh, you bet you I would.
You get the dial-up sounds. Well, I'm not nostalgic.
In the Stellar Souvenirs section, you can download WAV files of sounds from the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I need to assign something. I need to hear Tweety Bird saying, "You go, boy." Every time one of my buddies logs on, come on.
No. What about MJ saying, "You guys are nuts"?
Yeah, no, that's when somebody logs off.
Mm-hmm. No, he's fixing a divot.
What?
So
it's there. I got you, Dennis.
Okay, cool.
So like Lola Bunny's poster is just, there's a giant boob sticking out there. And it's like, I understand that there was some fuss on Twitter about
there was
Lola being changed into like having no gender now. Basically, a lot of people were fussing because she's not the sexy bunny anymore. But
because she's not a titty bunny, they like
she's like flat and doesn't have curves anymore, and so they're upset. And it's like, wait a minute, weren't people upset when she was released because she was a titty lady? Like, I don't
look. There was the horny police then. There's the not horny enough police now.
No matter what you do, that just goes to show you, no matter what you do, booby later or no booby lady, you're going to upset the fans. The fans are just going to be mad no matter what.
There's a certain go ahead.
I'm going to have to go to the behind the jam section to see if there's any more information about this.
Yeah, I need to get the inside scoop vis-a-vis Lola's boobs. Oh man, there's no fucking way, unless I'm being paid, I'm gonna watch this new Space Jam.
I don't know, they turned LeBron James into a cartoon. Did they ever do that with Michael Jordan?
No, they didn't. They just did a much more expensive thing.
They had cartoon elements of Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
I believe his eyes go big at one point,
his arm stretches.
Yeah.
No, dude, that shot is emblazoned in my brain where he stretches his arm to dunk because his arm hair is unescapable.
He gets flattened on a basketball at one point, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I watched the trailer. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And it was notably short on like the slapstick.
Is yeah. Wayne Knight present? Is Newman from Seinfeld present?
No, this is not going to be as good of a movie.
Yeah, Wayne Knight was the cornerstone of that.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about my man Bill Murray though?
Sure, if you can. Is he in it?
Well, in the first one, yeah.
Well, yeah, of course, in the first one. But did they bring him back?
Probably not.
Bill Murray would do that in a heartbeat too. You know he would.
They have finicky. Don Cheadle. That's who they have in the new one.
He's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Which okay. I will be very sad if Bill Murray is not in the second one.
Yeah, at least as a cameo. I mean, for the fans, you know. Mm-hmm. No,
well, just for Bill Murray, because Bill Murray didn't do anything.
Dare I tell you that I don't remember a damn thing about that movie?
Space Jam Watch Party, let's go.
No. If you want me to throw something, I'm sure. Yeah. And not a basketball. Did you play basketball?
I really played
basketball. I
really enjoy you trying to outmaneuver us.
Look, so growing up, I had the two hoop system on my driveway, where there was like the 10-foot one, and then my dad had installed like a kitty size one.
Okay.
The second that kitty size one went away, I never touched a basketball again.
No, because you don't want to feel bad about yourself. Basketball is about feeling empowered.
Exactly. Yeah. If I can't dunk on it, it does not exist.
Yeah. No, Space Jam for me, like, yes, the movie was fun when I was, but that was 1986, so I was like 9 years old. Perfect Space Jam age. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, it pretty much just existed as like the song they would play at the roller rink whenever there was a birthday party at the roller rink, the Coliseum here in Mansfield, before it burned down twice.
Wait, what?
Cole, did you go there with the pile of sticks?
No. I love that place.
It was Mansfield. Why are buildings just burning down here?
No, the Chi-Chi's burned down three times, and they decided to stop putting a Chi-Chi's there. And then the Coliseum burned down twice, and they're like, fuck, man, I don't know. Let's bulldoze it. Which sucked, because it was a lot of fun. It was a great place to go.
Is like arson just normalized in?
It's for the greater good, Ben. It's for the greater good. Right. Yeah. We spent so much.
If you're talking about NBA Jam, that was a fun game.
That's a good game, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good game. Space Jam?
We spent so much time on Space Jam. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
Can we go?
I was about to go into the implications of the redesign of Sonic to Lola the Bunny, but we don't have to.
Yeah, no, we don't need to go there. That'll be... Jolly needs to go to sleep, and so do I. So I've got an early morning hours. Tomorrow. Yeah. Hey, Jolly, can we button it up?
Please, buttons.
The credit. Thank you, all of you Space Jammers out there, for listening to level number 366. We really appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to close spacejam.com because it is in my face. I'm going to close the new worst spacejam.com. There we go. But yeah, you know the things you can do: Patreon and iTunes ratings and reviews, and telling your friends. Go check out the bonus level that we did about the first Phoenix Wright game that Jell and I put together. It was a lot of fun, and I don't know if there's anything else to report, but the feedback that I saw on it was good.
Yeah, a lot of people liked it quite a bit. There's a spoiler wall, so have not played this 20-year-old game and you really want to, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
We have generality section followed by the run-through.
Yeah. So go check that. It's just back there in the public feed. We gave it to everybody. Cool. So I think that's everything that I've got. Dennis, what's going on with Deck of Wonders?
Let's see. We continue to release new concept art. So, go check that out. Lauren Brown does an amazing job, and it's always fun to see new stuff. Nothing too crazy though. Still got a while before like pre-orders are going to close, so you can still get in on it if you haven't already. But yeah, just cranking out art, or rather, Lauren is cranking out art.
That's very cool. Anybody else have anything they want to plug?
No.
Okie doke. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can check out that Deck of Wonders art at Deck of Wonders on Instagram.
I'm Jolichon, in places you can find me there.
I'm Ben Rickle.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got titles for me?
I got a few.
Okay.
Stick Highway.
Oh, right. Yeah, about me burning down my house.
Spread and Isolate. Also about your house.
Okay.
You Can't Find Him on a Mirror Site. Underwater Social Democracy.
Okay.
Under and Above the Same Roof.
Okay.
Space Timeshare.
Yeah.
Show Me the Button. And Inescapable Arm Hair. Which I think that's the one I'm going to have to vote for because it was the most ridiculous one.
Dennis, what you got?
I also had Space Timeshare.
Okay.
I had Dick B. Riddick.
Yep. From early on. That's his name? Richard B. Riddick. Dick B. Riddick.
Is that true?
Yes, his name is Richard B. Riddick.
Oh, I thought it was a goof.
Seriously.
I also had Librarian.
What was that? What?
Librarian. The Librarian.
Okay. All right.
Those are mine.
Okay, Ben, what you got?
I just have one. I think it's Blood. It's probably Blood.
Okay. You can... It's taking me forever to type this. And I have Por Que No Los Todos. I like Space Timeshare, all as one word.
I'm down for that.
That one had votes. Do we have any cases for other stuff?
I already made my case for my one, but then Inescapable Arm Hair.
Yeah. Does anybody want to throw in and overrule me on Inescapable Arm Hair?
I think of the two, I'm with Space Timeshare.
Aww.
I know.
I just want to point out that on the Space Jam website, they have a link for Mars Attacks, but if you go there, that website doesn't exist anymore. Space Jam stood the test of time.
That's so sad. So much about the late 90s is so sad because of the evidence that we have of it. Space Timeshare, is that good with that? Good with everybody?
Okay.
Okay. Cool. All right. I'm gonna go. I have I've got to wake up early tomorrow. I am giving a talk to a class at UC about podcasting. So oh, nice. I'm gonna ruin some lives.
I was about to be like, man, that's a long way to drive, but everything is virtual. So.
It is. Yeah. If it was in person, I would
run away.
Oh, hey there, Greta. Girl. Aww. Okay. Cool. Take care, everybody.
No, get to the end of the lecture and tell them that this has been a podcast the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. I've been recording this.
Always I'm releasing. Be making content.
Yep. Nothing is not content. Cool. Well, take care, everybody.
Cool. See y'all.
Yeah. Bye.
Night.
Bye, Jalen. Bye. Bye, Ben. Bye, Dennis.